In your socialist government, would you be allowed to have a capitalist party?
I mean, yeah, sure. But okay. I don't think it should be given power.
What does that mean?
Well, I mean...
You see, you can't even say, just say no. You would. It's okay. You can argue against it. Do you think I made Hassan Piker?
No.
But I made Nick Fuentes?
But, like, that to me tells...
The peaceful socialist getting arrested for fighting is kind of crazy, I guess, but... Hey, what's up? How's it going?
It's going well. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
So I wanted to ask you your thoughts on how the Epstein files are being handled, because Pam Bondi, she's an idiot how she's handled them. Like, she's protecting pedophiles, and I think she needs to resign. What are your thoughts on Pam Bondi?
The biggest disagreement I would have there is I think we have to be careful when we call these people idiots. I don't think they're idiots. I think they're being very intentional with what they're doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, this administration came in promising us a ton of stuff from those files. It seems like forever ago, but Pam was the one who said that they were going to do a massive release, and she gave those binders out to, like, it was like 10 different influencers that were holding up the Epstein Files Part 1. And I guess we're still waiting for part two or part three. I don't think it's ever coming. You know, we've heard the FBI got orders to redact Trump's name and probably a whole bunch of his friends from the documents. Yep. We haven't gotten the full release yet, despite the law that was passed by Congress, basically unanimously requesting them. I mean, you asked me if Pam should resign. I mean, I feel like half this cabinet should resign. I feel like Trump should probably go, but... I think, unfortunately, I think what's happened, what you've seen, is the same pattern is kind of repeated over and over again, where Republicans always talk about this deep state. They use very scary words like them or they, but they never really specify who. And coming into this admin, I don't know if they thought they'd find stuff with the Epstein files or if they just were hyping it up because they wanted to win off of an election theory or whatever. But, yeah, I mean, they finally have the time to put up or shut up. They've got Congress, the Supreme Court. They've got the motivated people in office, but they produce nothing. So, I think there should be massive accountability for it.
I was actually, like, very supportive of Trump, before all the Epstein stuff happened. And then after I saw all that stuff, I just felt really betrayed by him. And a lot of his base, like, a lot of my friends that are also Trump supporters, like, they felt the same way. And... I just think we really need accountability from Trump, and I do think, like, if he continues this fiasco, I think he does need to step down, and I think Congress should start demanding more accountability from Donald Trump.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree. I think one of the sad things, one of the lies that the conservative movement has kind of sold, especially the MAGA movement, is that there's, like, this massive conspiracy behind everything. And I think the kind of boring thing is, for a lot of stuff, there's not really a conspiracy. It's just a lot of stuff. If you've ever joined a project and there's stuff you don't understand and you think you can get rid of a ton of stuff, usually you start to realize when you start throwing stuff away, like, oh, wait, well, this was here for this reason or this was here for this reason. I mean, this shows up in so many different projects that you could manage. And I think when the Trump admin came in, you know, they told us there was a conspiracy everywhere, when in reality, some problems are difficult to solve. There's not, like, an easy catch-all fix for illegal immigration, for crime, despite them pretending that they've, like, solved crime in 3 or 4 different cities. Like, I mean, everybody knows that's not true. You know, Trump says zero people have crossed, but really zero. Like it's not even really a believable lie. I think the issue is when you oversell your kind of, like, populist positions like that, that you can come in and completely and totally fix a problem with a very simple fix. I think you're always lying to your base. And I feel like that's kind of caught up to them this time. And I think the people that should feel the most upset are the people that cared about the issues coming in. If you thought there were bombshells in the Epstein files, you should be upset that Trump is ordering his DOJ and Pam is ordering the FBI.
That's exactly what I thought. I thought there was bombshells that would expose a lot of the pedophiles in our government.
Yeah. And I mean, if you think about it, like, either outcome is almost just as bad. Like, if there are pedophiles and they're protecting them, I mean, that's a really bad thing, right? You had Elon Musk throw a temper tantrum when he got kind of ejected, and he was like, well, Trump is in the Epstein files. And it's like, okay, well, you know, where are they? Why don't we see those? But also, if there aren't bombshells in there, I think you should feel equally upset. It's like, well, hold on, did you know this was BS the entire time? You had people like Bongino on podcasts saying, well, I've got sources in the CIA and the FBI that are telling me all this information. It's like, was that just a lie? You know, so
and I
think either way,
like,
is really bad.
A lot of, like, some Congress members, like Nancy Mace, they're being very performative about it, and I don't think they're actually protecting the victims. How do you think we should better protect the victims of the Epstein files?
I mean, having a functioning DOJ that doesn't seem to be trying to win political points, I think, is the most important. It's a shame because people say, like, on the conservative side, people will talk about the lawfare and the weaponization of the DOJ by Biden. But, like, if you're a liberal on the left, like, everybody hated Garland for how slow it seemed the legal process went when it came to the Mar-a-Lago indictments, when it came to the appointing of Jack Smith for the January 6th case. Like, it was like 2 years in the administration before this stuff was really getting off the ground, and people were really upset about that on the left. Meanwhile, on the right, they claim that it's all political lawfare, but then as soon as Trump gets into office, he's truthing out, you know, to Pam Bondi the exact people that he wants to indict, the exact lawyer that he wants to use to indict him, and it's like, you know, for all the weaponization, they don't really have any results that they seem to have produced yet. We've got, regardless of how you feel about illegal immigration, like the whole process is being, you know, completely fudged up, and they're just messing up so much stuff procedurally that even if you want them to be effective in shipping people out of the country, they can't seem to do it effectively. And it's a shame. I think that, you know, for what you said, what do you do to protect victims? You know, as boring as it is, like, we have processes in this country that are kind of important, and if you have to have people that can navigate the process and procedure, and they should know better. And when you start to mess all of that up, I mean, you're doing a disservice to the victims, you're doing a disservice to the American public. Crimes are things that we all have an interest in the state prosecuting, and you know, if there were crimes there to prosecute, then they might have irreparably harmed the ability to even do that.
Thank you.
Cool. Thanks for the question. Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you? I used to watch you on Twitch, so I'm a big fan. But even though I know that's a little messy, but
you're good. Don't worry about it.
So, as you know, like, our system is incredibly corrupt, and I feel like it's just these like past 2 years that we've been really like kind of being exposed to it all. I mean, it's always pre-existed, but I think like right now, like the media is like really like going hard on like everyone's like investigating themselves like individually. How do you think we can, as a country, pull ourselves out of like this ongoing cycle of corruption? Because clearly it's on the both the left and the right, and it's like, how do you keep a government, how do you rebuild a government for the people again? Because that was who it was originally built for. I know this is a very ambiguous question, but
no, it's okay. I'm gonna give a very unsatisfactory answer. I think at some point, when there are no enemies left, like the enemy becomes yourself. When you have nobody left to fight against, you kind of look around for enemies to fabricate. I think it's good to step back and sometimes ask ourselves, like, what do we mean when we say, like, the whole system is corrupt or everything is messed up? Like, if we look at where we were, and even arguably where we still are, where we were as a country a few years ago, right, we have the largest economy in the world, despite we don't have the largest population. Mm-hmm. We have the most advanced technology in the world. You know, we're still leading, right. Maybe I think against China with AI and crypto and everything else. We've got, obviously, the most commanding military presence in the world. You saw how much Russia struggled in Ukraine compared to the missions we've done in Iran, compared right. to the toppling of Saddam Hussein. Like, to say we have the best colleges in the world, people travel from all over the country or from right. all over the world to come to the schools in this country. Like, America has a lot going for it. And I think it's hard to reconcile, like, how can all of these things be working if our system is truly as, like, corrupt and rotted as everybody says it is? I don't really think it is that way. I think we have problems. Mm-hmm. And I think what happens is, sometimes there's like a conflict of interest, or sometimes there are multiple people polling at both ends. And when we only consume our media, it looks like the answer is very obvious. Right. But I think the answer sometimes is a little bit more convoluted or a little bit more complicated than it seems to actually solve a thing. And so instead of actually wanting to kind of chew through that process and figure out what's going on, you know, people are very quick to throw the corruption thing around. When there are two sides to a lot of issues and people don't really look at the other side, a really, really, really common one is like, if you wanted to appeal to the vast majority of Americans, like, what would you do about the cost of housing and the cost of rent? Like, the very intuitive answer there is that it has to come down. The reality is you want it to go up if you want to appeal to the majority of Americans, because most Americans live in homes that are owned. Right. And when housing prices and rents go down, it technically hurts those people's assets and equity. Mm-hmm. But that's a very unintuitive answer. Nobody really talks about that in the media. So when people are trying to figure out, like, well, how do I bring down the cost of housing? Nobody really addresses the fact that you're going to be hurting every single person that owns a home or owns an apartment building or whatever else. Mm-hmm. And that's just like an example of, like, we are quick to insert corruption and evilness when it's really, like, it's complicated. There's a lot of different moving pieces right. in this country. I think there is corruption that's worth weeding out, but I also think that we have a lot of processes in place, and for whatever reason, we just don't pay attention to them sometimes. So
right.
when DOGE came through and they wanted to, you know, claim that the government was wasting all this money, one of the big claims they made had to do with Social Security and old people, dead people on Social Security. Every single number that they posted came from a 2023 Office of Inspector General report. So every single, like, every large federal, every federal, like, office has a counter thing called an Office of Inspector General. Mm-hmm. So every time you hear, like, a watchdog group found this, it's the Office of Inspector General that, you know, audits and investigates the main office that they're the counter to. Mm-hmm. And all of the stuff that DOGE was saying was already in an OIG report from the OIG of the Social Security Administration. But like, this is the thing that like nobody pays attention to. And so sometimes like somebody walks in and they go, oh, this is a bad thing. And it's like, yeah, we know, we're working on it.
Right.
But nobody sees that process. So
do you think
yeah.
the complexity also applies to like a congressional level, like in terms of like when people are trying to like make legislation, pass bills so we can like alleviate the complexity in like the systems like our housing system or... Yeah, for example.
I mean,
way,
I think the biggest problem is we just have to have honest conversations about it. Like, I think there can be legitimate disagreement, you know, whether we're talking about housing or healthcare or whatever else. Like, I think that there are arguments you can make to have it more privatized. I don't generally side with those. I think there are arguments you can make to have it more government, you know, funded and government applied expansion of Medicare or like single payer healthcare. But the problem is like we have to be able to sit down and have the question and have that conversation. Like, there's a huge difference between talking about how do we balance the interests of like resources and people that need healthcare. And what do we do about that? That's a different conversation than Big Pharma wants to kill Americans and Big Socialist wants to kill all of our businesses and Big Government wants to kill everybody. Because, like, when you're having that conversation, what are you even talking about anymore, right? You're not actually, like we can have this debate
like
all day
over
who's trying to murder each other, but we're not getting any closer to solving any of the problems. And then those problems are still existing, and then they're just getting exacerbated. And then, meanwhile, now the current admin is gutting all of the systems that were auditing those things, and it's like you're just making everything worse. Like, nothing's gotten better, you know?
Yeah, and I think also, like, a lot of, like, the current admin is really being like delegated by those big super PACs and like those of like the upper social class. And it's like, how do you like ever since Citizens United passed, it's like, how do you undo that? And because I think like a lot of like, that's where like, you know, most of those private equity companies are buying out like housing all across America. And it's like, we're already like deep into it. So I guess like, yes, it's complex, but also like, how do we like pull ourselves out of it? Because like right now, like Congress is very bought out
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes back to, it's a boring answer, but like we have to be able to have honest conversations about what's going on. Mm-hmm. So like when it comes to Citizens United, again, like people like to point that out as that like, you know, big donors are buying up a lot of stuff, and super PACs have. There's a lot of money that goes through those for sure. And I'm sure they influence the way that congressmen vote. We know that there are companies that insert legislation into bills. They're basically writing them for the congressmen to insert into the bills. But then again, it's like on the flip side of that is like, what does a limitation on freedom of speech look like when it comes to being able to spend money on congressional campaigns or when it comes to being able to spend money on things that are parallel to congressional campaigns? Like a fundamental question related to Citizens United is, let's say there's an election coming up, and let's say that I want to fund a huge movie that I think is really important, and it has to do with climate change.
Right.
And I could be pro or anti-climate change. Like, does that count as a campaign contribution? And I think that these are really difficult questions to answer, but they're really good questions to ask. And we can start legislating it. We can see, like, maybe you could argue right now we've peeled back too much. Maybe it shouldn't be that you can have a super PAC that has nine figures of money flowing through it that's helping people win elections. Maybe we legislate a little bit heavier against that. It's like, you know what? If this is an issue that we decide is too political, you can't throw in unlimited money at it and we just pretend that it's an apolitical project.
Right.
But again, it can't be that, like, you know, Jews and APAC and super PACs or communists or whatever, whoever's controlling all this. It has to be an honest conversation about, like, what should that environment look like?
Right.
Yeah.
I guess,
and the more that people keep hijacking everything with these stupid conspiracy narratives, like the longer we're not having a conversation about what should freedom of speech and campaign contributions, what should that actually look like? Because we never have that conversation, you know?
Well, I guess, like, yeah, I agree. And I also think that a majority of, like, the conspiracy theorists and, like, where their reasoning is rooting from is a lot of, like, distrust in our current government, also, like, government over time. And, like, it's a very, like, sticky... It's getting stickier and stickier because, again, like... things about the Epstein files and like the last girl just said, like, everyone's information coming out, the redactions and all of that stuff. It's like, I think it's hard to blame conspiracy theorists when we're withholding valuable information to the American people and we're not being transparent. So
yeah, I don't disagree, but we need to expect more of our political leaders, of our cultural leaders, people in media, people in podcasting world, people on YouTube or whatever. And we need to expect more of ourselves. Like, everybody's had, if you have a group of girlfriends or whatever, you know, a girl breaks up with a guy after 5 or 6 years, and there's always, like, that weirdo dude who's, like, consoling her, and, like, everybody knows he's a horrible, terrible piece of shit, but he's, like, he happens to be in the right place at the right time. And you're always telling this friend, it's like, listen, I know this guy's saying whatever, but, like, this guy is a horrible person. He's just trying to capitalize on your misfortune.
On the ongoing
yeah.
damage.
damage.
And you always say, like, you can't, like, this guy is going to be horrible for you. And, you know, sometimes people fall into those rebound relationships, and after a year, they realize, like, okay, fuck, these were horrible, you know? Right. And when I look at, like, all of these, like, Skepto people, or I look at, like, the current administration especially, it feels like a bad rebound relationship. Because you get these people who are saying things like, Big Pharma is poisoning us. And it's like, okay, maybe, but it's like, you're sponsored by how many different supplement companies that, you know, there's little to no FDA oversight in a lot of this. Like, you're pushing a lot of the same conspiratorial bullshit, but nobody is, like, skeptical of you. You know, if people went in and they were like, I'm really skeptical of the administration, and I'm also skeptical of all these podcasters, that would be one thing. But when people are like, I'm skeptical of what the FDA or the CDC says, but I believe every single thing that Joe Rogan says wholeheartedly, it's like, okay, well, that's, like, that's not very skeptical. You're very selective with your skepticism. And, like, these guys are selling you the same bullshit just on the other side of the aisle, you know? And I think that's a problem, because then we just yo-yo back and forth between...
So it's really about, like, creating a healthy balance, like...
Yeah, it's kind of, I mean, like, what we're doing here, I guess, with the Unfuck America tour, or what I try to do when I talk to other people, it's just, like, if you start having, like, real conversations, eventually, through that discourse, you'll start to, you know, like, carve a path forward in a better direction
that's,
like, actually solving the problems.
Yeah.
But going from, you know, getting rid of vaccines and eating, you know, vitamin C gummy bears, and then, like, bouncing back, like, this isn't working. Like, we're not getting anywhere. Like, I have fucking measles outbreaks in my country. It's insane, okay? This is, I'm supposed to make fun of other countries for that, all right? Like, measles outbreaks, that's crazy in the United States.
South Carolina,
we're going to lose our, we're going to lose our elimination status for the disease.
Right.
And it's because people think that the guy, you know, that's selling you supplements is more trustworthy than the 400 civil servants in the CDC or the NIH. And it's like, why would we believe that? Is that really, like, have they really served us better than everybody? Yeah. But so that's very frustrating to me. I want the better conversations. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, I have to go take a midterm, but thank you for your time.
Good luck. Yeah, thanks. Hey, how's it going?
Going great. So hopefully, if the Democratic Party gets back in office, in 2028, do you think there should be some type of larger authoritarian state as a result of the actions of the Republican Party so far? I'll just let you answer that.
Well, I'm a liberal, democratic, constitutional guy, so I wouldn't like an authoritarian state, or what do you mean?
So I feel like there should be some amount of, like, disenfranchisement from the Republican voters, or there needs to be, like, serious consequences when it comes to how our system works. I mean, if we punish these people, the mechanisms are still all in place to go ahead and take advantage of our system. We see our system at least has some faults, some cracks in it, right?
So here's here's the issue when it comes to a system, right? Like, this is the analogy I always use. If you show up to your friend's apartment and you guys are playing Monopoly and some dude, you know, is losing, he lands on Boardwalk, you've got, you know, hotels there, and you guys play Monopoly anymore? Is that a game you guys play?
Big time.
Okay, gotcha. So he loses all his money and he takes out a knife and he starts stabbing people at the table. There's not going to be anybody at the table who says, for the next Monopoly game, we're going to write the rule no stabbing people. Right? Because it's like, this guy's clearly not playing by the rules and doesn't care. He's just trying to get whatever outcome he can. The idea of looking at the current administration and saying, like, okay, well, we need to fix this and this and this and this and this, you're never going to be able to stop a corrupt executive. Like, the executive, the executor of law, has theoretically unlimited power, because at the end of the day, they're the ones that we expect to carry out through the full faith and goodwill of what Congress passes, like, to carry out the laws. Now, to separate that, there are some changes that I think we should make. I think there are good arguments for a dramatic expansion of the Supreme Court. At this point, I think there are strong arguments to get rid of the filibuster. Like, these are things we can do. But the idea of trying to patch the system against, like, a Trump figure, I don't think it's possible. There should be some kind of repercussions, though, so that Republicans don't think they can act like this in the future and get away from it scot-free, because that's just crazy.
Yeah, so that's actually kind of what I was referring to. I think, I don't know why I said system, but I'm talking about the people responsible for propping up this admin, like the voters itself. That's what I meant by expanding the authoritarian state upon people who can get the right to vote or not. I think if you're sitting here and you're voting for Trump in 2024, do you think that, like, these people should still be able to, like, choose who our presidency is? Like, clearly they cannot make a good decision by their own accord, right? They shouldn't have, like, autonomy, right?
I separate these out between, like, the believers and the deceived, kind of, or the non-believers and, like, the deceived. I think you have these people in media, so, like, your Jack Posobiec's, your Ben Shapiro's and Jordan Peterson's, your Candace Owens. These are people who I think are, they're evil people who are selling you lies, and they know they're selling you lies. Like, they know at the end of the day that everything they're saying is absolute and total bullshit. But the issue is, like, for the people that are persuaded by those people, sometimes I don't know how much I fault them. Like, you know, I might be mean on stream sometimes and everything, but, like, depending on the media environment you're in, it's, like, really brutal. Do you know who Asmongold is?
Of course, yeah.
Big streamer. Yeah, so if you watch this guy and you look at the way that he just browses his X feed, like, man, like, if you're inundated with news like that every single day for weeks, months, years, it's not surprising for some of these people that they fall into kind of the pitfalls that they're in. Like, and to be frank, like, I do this all day, every day. I have the luxury of being able to sit back and read a ton of stuff and talk to a bunch of experts and blah, 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 blah. For the average person who goes to work and they come home and they might just browse Twitter or they might turn on the news and look at a, or watch a podcast or whatever, I wouldn't expect this person to start critically breaking out, you know, statistical analyses of studies brought up on Joe Rogan to decide whether or not they're right or wrong. I think the responsibility there lies with the media environment, the social media, and the creators, and I think we should demand more from them. So in terms of, to get back to your question, for the accountability aspect, there needs to be accountability for the people that are lying intentionally. Like for Fox News, when they pushed the whole Dominion lie, they all knew they were lying about that. They all, behind the scenes, it all came out in that Dominion lawsuit. They all knew that they were complicit in that lie. That's unacceptable. And I think all of those people should fall in a legal manner or something, you know, and I think you should find a way to hold them accountable. But like for the average voter that just votes, like you said, we say vote dumbly. I mean, it's hard to blame them when there's such a massive system that's been designed to hijack everything they care about and then take advantage of them.
Okay, so I mean that would be kind of in essence expanding or like clamping down on our First Amendment if you're going to ahead and punish these people for lying.
Is it though?
I mean, yes.
I don't think so. I feel like there's something to be said for like freedom of speech and the ability for truthful statements to be evaluated honestly by the public versus everybody being able to lie. Like,
well, in America, I mean, you have.
Well, but
the
I mean, even
in America,
like, you can't defame me. Like, I could sue you for that, or you can't plan a crime with somebody. That's conspiracy,
do you,
right?
Do you want to just sue these people, or like, how do you expect taking punishments?
I don't know if it'd be through the U.S. government suing them, or some kind of like criminal conspiracy that you'd find them on, like kind of like the Jan 6 thing for Donald Trump that Jack Smith was going to do, but got tossed when Trump won, or they rescinded it when Trump won. Like that, you have to find a way to do it. I don't know if it'd be best to do it like criminally or civilly. But I don't think it would be an attack on our First Amendment or freedom of speech to like hold people accountable for just telling lies. Because if anything, at the end of the day, I think it damages our ability to have free speech if you don't know who you can trust when people are talking.
Yeah, no, I largely agree with that. I just think that, like you said, we need to dish out punishments to the pundits, at least at minimum, right? And I don't know if the people that aren't able to discernate like reality from fiction should be given the right to vote. They already showed that they're irresponsible with it. I mean, that's like the kind of the point and the benefits of like a technocracy. We're still able to combine that with like not like a technocracy, but like having the more like intelligent people vote on a candidate. It seems like we kind of like solve that issue of like democracies when we disenfranchise.
Yeah, but I don't know. Are more intelligent. Like I might have like internally believed this, but not publicly said it. Maybe like 10 years ago, but now looking at all the crypto finance bros or whatever, I would consider. I don't think Mark Andreessen is stupid. Or
well, sorry yeah, by technocracy, I kind of just meant like people. I guess I shouldn't have said technocracy. But I guess I was saying like people that have more merits in the system who understand how government should work or how America functions.
But I mean, we should be able to sell that to the American public. There's a world where we run the government substantially differently, but then we kind of have ended the democratic project. Like, there's something special to the idea that every single person can vote and the public will decide through deliberation and consumption of media and statements by politicians, everything else. Like, we decide, like, who we think is qualified to run the system. If it gets to the point to where the public can no longer do that, then we have to ask ourselves if there's something that we can change about that or if we're done with kind of like the liberal democratic version of government, ready to move on to the next thing. I haven't quite given up on the democratic version of governing yet, but the question comes down to like, what are we going to do about social media platforms and just like the massive amount of lies that exist in our media landscape right now?
Yeah, I don't want to take up too much time. So I guess like the final thing is, so for 2028, is the only punishment being dished out, I guess, is like not allowing these people back into office and then like going ahead and attacking, or not attacking, but you know what I mean, by going ahead suing these top like media pundits, like is that truly the solution to these problems? Like, what's not gonna?
I think not barring a lot of the conservatives from office that were complicit in a lot of Trump stuff, I think is a good first step because it discourages future people from doing it. Because remember, the sad thing is that if you look at the Republicans that exist right now in office, they're kind of doing the thing they should be doing because there's been no repercussions it, right? So if there is accountability in terms of that, in terms of being barred from running for future office, I don't know what impeachment looks like for senators or people in the House. Actually, I have no idea what that process is like, but if you're impeached as president, you can't run for office again. So maybe it's something like that. Maybe, you know, civil liability for a lot of the pundits that lied. I don't know who would have standing to sue them, or maybe some kind of criminal conspiracy if they were collaborating to lie. You know, like maybe that works. But even if it's just like a lot of lawsuits that ultimately don't, you know, end up in success, like just being sued so much would hopefully discourage that type of behavior in the future. There just has to be some some kind of discouraging factor. Because right now, if you're a Republican and you're like, well, I kind of want to, or if you're a MAGA person, you're like, well, I want to lie to the public a whole bunch about everything. Like, you kind of should, because there's a whole bunch of money there. There's a huge audience there. There's no negative repercussions. You've got, you can always pivot out in the future. Like, and that shouldn't exist. They should at least think, like, oh, I'm going to have to deal with a lot of bullshit, either getting sued or whatever else at the end. I think that would hopefully gum up that process at least a bit.
All right, yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Hi. I'm back up.
Hi. What's up?
Kind of what you were just talking about, I think, with the way that, like, our media landscape has just been totally fucked, especially, you know, by the conservatives and Republicans and, like, these conservative pundits and media heads. I think my biggest worry, and of course this probably just falls under that, I'm assuming you've probably heard the claim that there was, like, a religious resurgence among Gen Z and Zillennials, or have you?
I mean, I have, but, like, no offense, like, young people believe a lot of things and they come and go, and yeah.
No,
like, there was also that, like, 30-point swing conservative, or the 30-point difference, I think, between, like, Gen Z men and women, and I think that, like, vanished in, like, 6 months or something, so I never know how big these things are, but I have seen it a lot online and everything, yeah.
Well, the biggest issue to me is not even just that, like, that was just spread around so much, but it was misconstrued. It's not actually, I mean, there is, like, some sort, I guess, of maybe, you know, a big coalition of religious people, maybe more casually religious Gen Zers, and maybe some more that are definitely, like, hardcore, I guess you could say. But there wasn't a, like, resurgence. It wasn't, like, 1950s America, which is, I guess, what they were trying to, you know, say that it was. And I guess maybe this is just me overthinking things, but unfortunately, perspective matters more than, I guess, hard facts. And at this point, which really bothers me, but that's kind of something that I'm worried about. It's the same thing with, like, people believing that all of these women want to be, like, trad wives, like stay-at-home moms, even though we all know that women are actually outpacing men in college enrollment and college attendance. And it just bothers me because if you look at these tradwife accounts, most of the viewers are actually made up of men. And so it's been kind of basically theorized. I saw somebody describe it as, like, porn for people who think porn should be illegal, which
that sounds about right, yeah.
And I think the thing that I am more concerned about is just knowing how people work and, like, the psychology behind so many people and how we get so swept up in bandwagons. I'm just very afraid of these narratives being perpetuated and, like, even though it's obvious that they are just not based in reality at all, and that kind of fucking over even more what we already have. I don't know if that's coherent, but...
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. It's going to be kind of boring, but relating back to I think the first person I chatted with, it's because it's difficult to have, like, a hard, nuanced conversation about what life would look like for young people going forward. Mm-hmm. And when that's a very complicated thing, people want to look to easy, simple answers, and that's just a very attractive thing to look for. But, like, people should ideally strive for more, or at least the content creator should be pushing people to more. Like, there's a lot of, like, male empowerment stuff that's disguised as, like, tough self-help, but it's, like, really all, like, just plays into kind of, like, these male power fantasies and everything.
Exactly.
And, yeah, when you've got, like, women that are attending college, women with access to birth control, you know, there's, like, a lot of options available to them that there weren't before, and the idea that we can ever go back... this is one of the most frustrating kind of lies or myths that conservatives tell, is that we can go back. We can go back to more manufacturing. We can go back to women not voting. We can go back to traditional... Like, you can't really. Like, culture never moves backwards. Like, the world is changing. Every other country is changing. Everything is changing around you. And what you have to do is you have to find a way to adapt and move forward. And some people just, that's difficult. There's a lot to do in order to actually make that happen. So people just kind of watch the power fantasy stuff and they kind of, like, get sucked in by it. And then when you do that and when you're told that that's the answer and then life isn't getting any better for you because it's not, there's never in the history of all of mankind been a girl on a Tinder date who sees a guy across the table open an Andrew Tate video and she's like, thank God I found the one. This is the guy for me. This never, ever, ever happened, right? But, like, when people think that and then things don't get better, they're like, oh, well, things must be even worse than I thought. You know, like, somehow you have an idea. And then when that idea isn't making things better, it, like, reinforces the idea, like, mm-hmm. even more. And then they get so mired down in this thing that's never going to help them. And, yeah, it's just people's unwillingness to have, like, difficult conversations around complicated topics, unfortunately.
Exactly. And I'm probably, at least on, like, feminism and gender issues, I'm probably way more, I guess, to the left or radical than most of your audience. Sorry, I'm a women's liber.
That's okay. We're a women hater here, but my audience is 90% men, so what are we going to do, you know?
But I have also just had, I've had a lot of issues with, I think, some of the narratives surrounding, like, the left has to appeal to men. The left needs to regain men. The left, you know, completely screwed up with men, and specifically young men, and they feel like they have nowhere to go. So, of course, they have to turn to the right. And I think, at least in my perspective, I think, okay, if you feel so disillusioned or just so, I don't know, left out, whatever the issue may be, to the point that you are willing to vote for people who say that they want, like, raped 10-year-olds to carry pregnancy to term, how can I ever believe that you are actually maybe even towards the left anyway? Like, how can I believe that?
I'm very sympathetic to that. Depending on who I'm talking to, I'm a big hater of a lot of that type of thought, the mm-hmm. idea that, like, oh, like, you know, I saw this feminist thing, so now I'm a Nazi. And it's
exactly.
like, okay, that's kind of weird. But, like, I do think that the biggest criticisms I would have of the left when it comes to this, especially kind of like the more social left, I don't think you have to, you know, create a party that is like welcoming men and inviting men back and loving men, but it has to not shit on them like insanely. And it's frustrating too because the left has a lot of tools, especially if you dig into like intersectionality and everything. The left has a lot of tools to analyze how people perceive the environment around them. But for some reason, those tools are completely neglected when it comes to analyzing sometimes people who are of majority classes. And I understand majority classes have different experiences, but in some ways, we have like very universal experiences. So for mm-hmm. instance, we all like to see ourselves represented in media and stuff. Like, it feels good to see somebody that looks like you, acts like you, talks like you, is from the same area, whatever. What, you know, whatever intersection of identity that you have, it's nice to see that represented. If you're to understand that making kind of misogynistic comments or kind of racist comments, but it should be okay and it's not a big deal, and then people on the left will say, well, it's not okay because it can be, you know, you've got the concept of microaggressions, you've got othering, and there's all these reasons why you can't do it. It's like, okay, fine. I buy into most of this. But then if all of this is true, how am I supposed to feel welcome in a place where they're like, kill all men, kill all white people? It's like, okay, well, Jesus, you know, and it's like, well, you just need to be better than that. It's like, and what they do is this problem of, and trust me, I believe a lot, I understand a lot in terms of majority minority class distinction. There's a lot of different stuff going on, but at the end of the day, like, the ultimate unit of analysis of any sociological study is like an individual, right? It's the individuals who you care about. And even if like white men are the majority class and do have most of the power in this country, an individual white man might not have that same perception, but he definitely will have the same perception of his individual experiences as any other individual in society. So when he walks into an environment and it says kill all men, especially if you're like a, you know, lower class, working class white guy, you're not thinking like, well, at least there's a whole bunch of people that look like me that are Fortune 500 CEOs, because that guy probably hates those people too, you know? So it's like, yeah. So I'm not a big fan of this, but I'm also kind of an asshole. I'm not a big fan of this baby all men or whatever to make them come back. But I do think they kind of probably have to peel back on, like, the massive, like, man hatred sometimes. I think I feel like it's not been as extreme over the past couple of years. I feel like that peaked in, like, 2013, 2014, even though mm-hmm. conservatives tell you it's getting worse every day.
Oh, but, yeah. I guess apparently, like, childless cat ladies all around the world or something.
I don't know. Anybody but yourself. Blame anybody but yourself for a lot of these people. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think they'll use things like the fact that women are attending college more than young men, typically, as some sort of statistic about how, like, oh, the world is actually working against men. And I just say this again as somebody with my own individual perspective on this. I'm the first in my family to ever even earn a bachelor's degree. My father did not earn a bachelor's degree, and my mom, I think, only attended community college. I think she only earned an associate's. And before that, the only formal education most of my family members had was up to high school. You know, so I was, and I'm kind of a weird case. I'm an only child, and I'm like the only grandchild.
Sure.
So, because none of my parents' siblings really had any children. And so for me, I was always told the best way to earn something, like make something of yourself, was to go to college. And my family is nowhere near like progressive or liberal or anything like that. And I think that that's what's like what is told to a lot of women, because, or young girls, and then who eventually grow to be women who attend college. Just because outside of maybe a few industries, there's not really anything that I can think of that's female dominated, or any sort of industry, or, oh my God, like work path. I don't know the wording here. I'm so
career,
sorry.
Career, maybe, yeah?
Yeah, career, sure. Path, excuse me. That women usually are able to easily attain without earning a college education. And so, yes, sure, if you want to say that that's a potential, you know, issue for men, I sure, go on ahead. But I don't think the issue is helped by conservatives telling men for 10 years, like, oh, learn how to code, don't go to college, college is stupid. And then these same, like, Republican politicians, I'm sure they're not, like, all formal politicians, but you get the idea.
Yeah.
They would never send their son to, like, an electrician's apprenticeship. They would never do that. They're sending them to Yale.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Yeah, and again, I mean, to return to the central theme, yeah, when you don't have good conversations and you have the bad ones, not only are you giving people bad information, you're not improving their lives, and then they're not having, like, access to the actual help that they need to actually advance or further themselves. They're just getting further mired down in whatever system they're in, which is very sad, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right, well, thank you for hearing me out on that.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hey, what's going on, dog?
Hey,
Big
what's up,
G
buddy?
Big G is in the house, Destiny.
Okay, Big G, how's it going?
It's going pretty good, man. I would just like to say something to you.
Oh, boy.
How about instead of unfuck America, you unfuck the relationship with your son?
Okay, I'll get right on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what I would like to debate you on
is life advice? More personal life advice?
Well, I wouldn't take it from you, considering you're being sued
for
sharing
life advice,
porn of other people
like
without their consent.
You got your
dude.
Life together real well, yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, I got like almost 4.0 GPA, and I'm
wow,
a senior about to graduate.
Crazy. Oh, my God. That's good for you. What major are you in?
Public health right now, yeah.
Cool. Good job.
Then hopefully med school afterwards. But what I would like to seriously...
Have you taken your MCATs yet?
No, I've been studying for that. I'm taking a gap year. But what I would like to debate you on is capitalism.
Okay.
So, I don't know that much about you, but whenever it comes to...
You don't know any of my positions, but you have personal attacks for me?
Well,
okay, that's fine. No, it's all good. Go ahead.
But, so you're a liberal. Why do you attack, like, people on the left and stuff like that?
Aren't liberal, I usually attack illiberal people because I don't think we have the same common values.
I mean, yeah, but like, I think that's like kind of antagonistic. Also,
I do want to be antagonistic to people that don't have the same values as me. That's the definition of
politics,
right?
Yeah, I know, but shouldn't we be uniting against the right instead of attacking each other?
You wouldn't unite with people that don't share fundamental values, right?
Well, fundamental values right now should be attacking fascism in America. And the corporate oligarchy.
Attacking fascism is like a subset of attacking illiberal ideology. And I think communists or socialists also have illiberal ideology. So
I don't
think I would
want
them.
Yeah, but they're not fascists, though. It's an antagonistic attitude because fascism promotes capitalism, monopolization of the economy.
Well, I think liberalism promotes capitalism. So, I mean, I don't know what you mean by that. Like, if you're an anti-capitalist, if you want to abolish all private property and abolish the, your participation in the ability to vote for different things that other people might not like. Like, I wouldn't really consider that a political ally.
I mean, you don't have to abolish democracy. You can have democracy and socialism as well. It's a complete ideology, democratic socialism. We've had instances of democratic socialism in countries that was elected democratically, such as Salvador Allende's Chile.
In a socialist country, would you be allowed to have a party that advocates for a capitalist economy?
I mean, it just depends on how free the economy is.
In
not
your
free.
Socialist government, would you be allowed to have a capitalist party?
I mean, yeah, sure. But
okay.
I don't
and
think it should be given power.
What does that mean?
Well, I mean...
You see, you can't even say, just say no. You would. It's okay. You can argue against it. But, like,
yeah, no,
to say
that you have,
like, a free, like, a totally free democratic system, but, like, there are some ideologies that are literally banned from competing in your political parties. I mean, obviously that wouldn't be completely
free,
right?
Yeah, but those ideologies are completely, like, amoral and exist for the exploitation of the labor class, though.
That's fine that you have that opinion, but at the very least,
I mean,
you're not,
it's actually
not a democracy
like
at that
true
point, right?
That they exploit the labor class. They kill millions overseas. Nestle Company killed 8 million people.
Okay.
For
how many
instance.
People died in the Holodomor? How many people died in Mao's revolutions? How many people
under
died
under capitalism,
in...
even though we have a resource uh-huh. surplus in regards to food, 8 million people die every year due to food insecurity. We have constant wars for imperialism, constant wars for
is socialism solving any of these? Do we have less wars with the Soviet Union or what?
Soviet Union wasn't like it wasn't starting wars and doing like proxy shit.
Really?
No,
what do you
not
think
in comparison
the word
to
comes
America.
From the Hungarian Revolution.
You
what
engage,
do you think all the
who overthrew Salvador Allende's Chile? Who overthrew Nicaragua?
I'm not
who
saying capitalist
Panama?
Countries are perfect. I'm not going to argue that. Of course, there's issues. I'm just saying I don't know why we
you're
would assume that.
You're comparing an aggressive power to more of a defensive power.
You think the Soviet Union was just defensive?
They weren't fucking overthrowing every single country that had socialist values.
What do you think the Soviet Union was? How do you think they got all those other countries in the Soviet Union? It was by overthrowing their governments or supporting people to overthrow
the
governments.
Yeah, those were domestic revolutions in many cases.
Domestic
revolutions? Domestic support
that were supported by the Soviets? You think
Afghanistan?
You think all these were just domestic revolutions? The Soviets just happened to? Do you think the same in Ukraine
right
now?
So you think every single one of those people who overthrew those governments were backed by Soviet Union agitators then?
I think there's a reason why when the Soviet Union collapsed, the countries that left didn't want to go back. There's a reason for that.
Well, the Soviet Union didn't exist when also when you talk about like Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, even Ukraine, they all voted to stay in 1989 with the Soviet Union.
Why didn't it even go back after 91?
Because the Soviet Union dissolved under Gorbachev after he did an illegal dissolution. What?
Why not try to join Russia?
Because Russia is a capitalist oligarchy.
Okay.
It's not.
That was their issue after, is that Russia became too liberal for them. They wanted back their Soviet overlords.
The economy collapsed under shock therapy, dude.
Sure.
Nobody's going to want to rejoin that. It did. GDP collapsed under Boris Yeltsin.
Yeah, I'm aware. I know you guys hate Yeltsin. Okay. What today in our political system, like, the problem is also like this is so pie in the sky. Like, so for instance, if we talk about like progress towards whatever world you want, what candidates would you even support today that are already in office? Besides Mamdani,
anymore? Oscaria Cortez is a really good one. Bernie Sanders, even though he's kind of become more liberalized. I mean, democratic socialism is something that Americans want right now.
Are the politicians winning elections that are Dem Socs? Why don't they exist anywhere?
Ilhan Omar, democratic socialist, Oscaria Cortez.
So
Mamdani,
we have the justice Dems, those four.
City that has the greatest GDP production in the United States, New York, got a democratic socialist mayor.
Yeah, so New York City, a very blue place, I'm aware of that. But outside of like these plus 30, plus 40 like blue places, where are all of these Dem Socs? Why don't they win elections in like competitive areas, in purple areas? Why don't they win elections in red areas? Why is it the only elections they can ever seem to win? The very, very few they have, the five that we've pointed out, the four Justice Dems and Mamdani, are in like super, super, super blue areas. That makes it seem like the people don't generally want democratic socialism.
Well, yeah, you have a polarization. America's a heavily propagandized population. Red states, politicians.
You understand I can't win the argument, right? Because on one, you just said that most Americans want this. And then when I ask, well, why don't they win elections? You say, well, because most Americans don't want it because of propaganda. Well, what am I supposed to say then?
Well, nobody doesn't even know what democratic socialism is. But what is
democratic socialists don't even have a consistent definition for democratic socialism. You can even tell me if you would allow capitalist parties to exist in your system.
Well,
or
I'm not
like
a
people
democratic
say the Soviet
socialist.
Union wasn't socialist.
I'm not a democratic socialist, though.
What are you, a socialist?
I think that you can't really have democracy and socialism at the same time because capital will overthrow the system again and become reactionary forces will reinstitute
capital.
Sure,
so you want
capital.
Like a vanguard party and you want to like have a violent overthrow of the whole capitalist class and everything?
Well, I wouldn't say for like legal reasons I'd want like a revolution or anything like that.
Sure.
So,
okay, sure. So I just don't know what I'm supposed to do with that. We have a system that exists today where we have a two-party system where we can push further to the left, we can push further to the right. None of the people on the far left that identify in your camp want to support any Democratic candidates basically at all.
Why would you want to support Democratic candidates? They're not giving us universal health care. They're not easing tuition. They're not making America necessarily affordable right now.
That's great.
And they're caving
into
Trump.
Really
they
good,
congratulated
like, Facebook
ICE.
Post,
there's
like,
no reason
you
if you're left-wing
push.
To support the Democratic Party. They cave in. They're the fucking fleshlight of the Republican Party.
I agree. Okay, that's fine. And if you want to have that opinion, that's great, but just don't pretend to be a Democrat.
It's not. Everything
just
I stated was
fact. Just
go
make your own party.
Gavin Newsom struck down a bill for public health care in California.
I'm familiar with all these lies. I don't really feel like running
it's
through them all right
lie.
Now.
It's not a lie.
It is. It is. If you feel this way, that's fine, but why not make your own political party then? Why like be a leech or a cancer in the Democratic Party that just sits here from an ultra-privileged
position? I'm not a member of the Democrat Party.
Okay, then don't be. Then don't advocate for that, and you shouldn't be, and I wouldn't want to form a coalition with you because we're fundamentally misaligned in values. We're not going to share the same values on almost anything. Which is fine, because we live in America, in a capitalist liberal America, we have the right to disagree.
Dude,
I don't know if we
would
in your country,
but... about putting Nick Fuentes on the map, dude.
Do you think I put Nick Fuentes on the map? The
guy
that works with Kanye
West online.
Campaign?
You said that online.
I didn't put... What do you mean? I've platformed him because I've debated him in the past. I think you should have debates with
people. Yeah, you platformed him, then you bragged about him becoming famous, do you?
I don't think I was the one that made Nick Fuentes famous.
Then why do you say it?
I don't think I do say that.
There's literally a video of it, along with an N-word
there's
compilation.
There's a video, or there's like a 7-second clip of me saying something. You saw it on a subreddit once. Okay.
I mean, a clip of it. I mean, you can say nuh-uh, all you want, dude, but like, actually.
Do you think I made Hassan Piker?
No.
But I made Nick Fuentes?
Yeah, but
you know, I platformed Hassan in a way more friendly way when he was a much smaller person than Nick, like, way longer, right?
well, I don't think you were fucking debating Hassan Piker in like 2018 and shit like that constantly.
Wasn't I literally debating Hassan in like 2019? And
I'm not like a crazy Hassan Piker fan. That's crazy that you obsess about some fucking tall tan guy. All fucking
tall,
dated.
Tall tan guy. He's the largest left-leaning political content creator. I also talk about Ben Shapiro.
Yeah, but you
and Jordan
automatically
Peterson
assume that like I'm this crazy Hassan Piker fan just because I'm left-wing.
Yeah, because you're a socialist.
Why are you, like,
Hassan
so fucking
Piker is a socialist. Is it crazy for me to assume that you would be politically aligned with a guy who shares your political ideology? Is that really that insane for me to think?
I mean, I just think it's kind of strange that you automatically go to that I'm like a part of this other guy's group.
If I was talking to a MAGA guy and I assumed that he was a Trump supporter, would that be a weird thing for me to assume?
What?
If I was talking to a Trump supporter, or if I was talking to a MAGA person or a conservative and I assumed they were a Trump supporter, would that be a weird thing for me to assume?
Yeah, but I'm not a Hassan supporter.
No, but you're
that's
both
the thing.
Socialist.
I don't define myself. Hassan's not like a fucking politician, dude.
Okay, that's great.
I support his policies and then put him in office.
I appreciate that answer. Now, why were you so quick to reject the idea then that I made him famous, though? Why did you seem personally offended by that?
Because I don't know enough about Hassan because I'm not a fan of Hassan. I don't like watch him like
religiously. Then why even have an answer? I don't know anything about that. Do you think that if it weren't for me, do you think Nick Fuentes would just not exist?
He wouldn't be as big.
Really? You don't think the Kanye West campaign helped at all? You don't think Candace Owens and all these other people that
I did, but that was like after you, though.
Okay, so without me, he would have never been involved in that Kanye stuff. Milo wouldn't have reached out to him.
He might
have,
but you definitely played a role and you even bragged about it.
Okay, well, if the 7-second clip said so, then I guess I can't argue with that.
I mean, you just admitted that you have a clip of saying that.
I've probably said that I have platformed him before because I debate a ton of people. Yeah, that's what I do. Do you think that like you should never debate people who have substantial disagreements with you? Should you never debate like a Nick Fuentes type?
Yeah, you can debate him, but you shouldn't fucking brag afterwards that you made them famous.
I don't brag about making him famous.
There's literally a clip of you doing it, though.
Okay, well, if there's a clip of me doing it, then Godspeed. God bless. Do you have any other points you want to bring up?
Not really. I'm low-key bored.
Okay, well,
so,
good luck in your...
But I do have something to say. I know it's contradictory to what I said earlier.
Okay.
But long live Hsiao Dao Pai Tung.
Great. Have fun. Good luck. Hey, what's up, man?
Hi, Destiny. My question is, how can the United States continue to, in good faith, support its NATO commitments when we saw under Operation Prosperity Guardian that not even the European Security Coalition is able to, or has the political will to support their own security interests, let alone the security interests of the United States?
When you say NATO commitments, do you mean like commitment to defending like the domestic territory of the United States of America, or what do you mean by that?
No, like our Article 4 and Article 5 commitments.
For NATO stuff? Or?
Yeah, and spending requirements.
And your question is like, what faith do we as Americans have that America will satisfy their NATO commitments or that the rest of the world will? Sorry, what was your first question again? Can you repeat it again? When you said Native at first, I was thinking Native Americans. I got confused. So sorry. Just repeat your thing again. I don't know.
Why should the United States in good faith support our NATO commitments when European community is not willing to even support their
NATO
own security?
Gotcha. I think Europe has largely supported their own security. Like, they're raising money for it now.
That's true, but I don't think they're willing to take any substantive action.
Well, I think because right now everybody's kind of waiting for America to wake up from the nightmare we're currently in, where nobody knows what American leadership's going to look like in the rest of the world. I would argue we should fulfill our NATO commitments because NATO came to our call when we did the Iraqi invasion after 9/11. We triggered an Article 4 thing on that, and we had a whole conglomeration of countries that joined us, and we've had NATO, you know, join us for missions in for Libya for the help for Saddam Hussein. Like, you've seen there's like lists of soldiers that have died, you know, as a result of NATO fulfilling their commitments to us. So I mean, I don't know why. I think there's self-interested reasons to do it. I think it's good to have access to all of these countries, that we have like shared military intelligence between all these countries, that we could deploy to all of these countries. I think it's a huge benefit, even from a self-interested point for the United States. I also think from like a moral perspective, I think the world has been largely more chill with like a NATO entity in existence versus what it was like prior to the existence of NATO, prior to the fall of the Soviet Union.
If the European security community were to take their position seriously, wouldn't you have expected there to be more action under the Biden admin in order to protect shipping in the Red Sea?
If the European community would have been more serious about their security, would there have been more action by the Biden administration to protect for which sea?
The Yemenis, the Houthis. when they were striking shipping, when it was
didn't Biden, didn't we literally deploy and attack a few missile strike sites in order to get shipping back to the Suez?
We did. The United States did, but there wasn't any
solidarity. Wasn't there a British aircraft carrier that came with us on one of those as well? I feel like there was. I'm pretty sure there was. I think the Brits deployed, because I didn't even know they had aircraft carriers. I think they might have one. I'm pretty sure they deployed their one, or they deployed some ships with us for that. But I mean, like, America, for the most part, we have the ability to do all this stuff. Like, we invest a ton of money militarily in it. We have the ability to ensure free shipping basically across every waterway in the world. So I mean, it makes sense that they would look to us to take the lead on that. But I mean, we have a lot of advantages as well. Like, we have a lot of intelligence. We have a lot of information about stuff going on around the world. We enjoy, like, the security of the United States as a result of that. I think it's like a give and take. Like, do you think we'd be more secure if Europe was managing that on their own and the United States was just kind of, like, doing our thing on this side of the planet?
Well, I think you could make the conclusion that we would be more secure if Europe was willing to put more resources behind real substantive military deployments instead of just their own internal security.
Yeah, but then what do we do when we end up with a conflict of interest with the Europeans? Like, what if the Europeans decided to side with Yemen, or they decided to side with Russia or China in something, and now we're at odds with them when it comes to shipping or trade?
Well, I think we need to operate under the assumption that the Europeans are going to fulfill the liberal framework, and that they're going to respect the rules-based international order.
When the United States hasn't, though, why would they? Like, wasn't Carney's whole speech about the idea that the Americans have basically dissolved that rules-based international order, that we've decided that we're going to make enemies of every country around us, we're threatening allies, we've deposed a leader of a foreign country, like, why would
Europe...
Yeah,
pretty much.
So what would be Europe's commitment to that, you know, for the benefit of the United States? Like, if Europe right now, the nice thing about things like NATO is that it keeps all of our interests aligned. Like, Europe's not going to be looking at a thing they can do that would screw the United States, because generally speaking, what benefits Europe benefits the United States, right? But if we're in totally different security apparatuses, and there comes a time where they have to make a decision related to Russia or China or something in the Middle East, and their incentives are not aligned with ours, they would probably go with theirs, and now we've just made, like, a massive enemy of a whole new continent for, I would say, for no reason. I don't know why we would.
All right, well, I hope I was able to play somewhat of an effective devil's advocate here, but...
Okay, well, thanks for the conversation.
And do you think that we should really be putting our weight behind someone who I would say is a bad factorial player?
I don't know who you're talking about, because I beat Space Age 100%, so nice try.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Hey, what's up, what's up?
Hey, Destiny. So I was just at the Myron Gaines thing, and I asked him, I wanted to get your opinion on this, because he wasn't able to differentiate between a civil infraction and a criminal offense. do you know the difference between the two?
Between a civil infraction?
Yeah, and a criminal offense.
Oh, shit. Well, like, for whatever reason, like, traffic infractions, I don't think rise to the level of, like, misdemeanor or felony crimes. Mm-hmm. My guess is for civil infractions, it probably generally can't result in the deprivation of, like, liberties. So, like, you probably couldn't be jailed ever, I don't think, for, like, a civil infraction.
Yeah, no, you can't. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So they probably only fines. Now, you could maybe be held in contempt of court for failing to pay a fine, and eventually maybe that could lead or whatever. But, yeah, that would be my guess. Okay.
Okay, so the reason why I'm bringing this up is because... Over, I would say, 70% of people under ICE detention have no criminal record, and, you know, they're being detained. And I think that that's a result of ICE focusing more on quantity than quality when they have, like, quotas to have to, they have to meet, like, 1,200 to 1,500 arrests per day, or they also have to meet, or they crunch down training from 22 weeks to 8 weeks. Do you think that those play a role in how ICE functions, or...
I mean, a little bit, but I think the big issue is the command from the top. Like, I think it comes from the top. Like, there's clearly very little regard given to certain types of people in this country based on, unfortunately, according to the Supreme Court, based on skin color or based on immigration status. I think it's insane that you have the president of the United States will look at U.S. citizens and say, like, for Ilhan Omar, like, she should be denaturalized.
Right.
If the president of the United States is saying that a sitting member of Congress should have their citizenship revoked, mm-hmm. then it's not surprising at all to me that ICE, you know, our internal enforcement arm for immigration deportation stuff, mm-hmm. is just acting with reckless reckless disregard for people's rights. You know, and you mentioned people help without crimes. There are U.S. citizens that are sometimes held and take weeks and weeks to get released or are flown around the country, you know, or sometimes are shipped out of the country entirely who didn't have orders or shot and killed. Everything with ICE is like, I was a huge hater of the abolish ICE movement 5 years ago. I think internal border enforcement, I think, is important, but like, I'm fully on board with the abolish ICE train now. I just think it's insane. I also didn't understand fully that, like, the difference between, like, they're like, I didn't know the executive branch had its own justice or its own judges to do immigration hearings and everything as well, like Article 2 versus Article, like, that's crazy to me as well. So, it's not surprising at all what ICE is doing, given the leadership's rhetoric and everything, yeah, unfortunately.
A little background about me, I ran for city council in a small town, in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very conservative. Actually, Trump came to speak there when he was running. He campaigned there. And it's a very small town, Pickens. And when I ran twice. I lost both times. But my dad used to be city councilman for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, he's Muslim. We're all Muslim. And once the Trump administration gained power, it felt like it emboldened the racism and emboldened the aggression towards Muslim community. So I feel like it's been harder for somebody like me to really voice my concerns about wanting to help my community. You know, I didn't make it about like Islam or nothing. I just tried to really give my perspective on it. A lot of the rhetoric that I hear now is justification of deporting people, you know, for simply being Muslim or coming from Muslim countries.
People forget, but like, and I'm not sure how old you are, but like when Trump ran the 24. First time, you're 24. Yeah. When Trump ran the first time, he ran on banning all Muslims from coming into the country.
Yeah,
that was a real thing that he really tried to run on. He tried to do it kind of again.
But Muslim voted because of Palestine. And I think that's very weird because he had a lot to do with why Palestine's
arguably, yeah, to get it to like the whole Abraham Accords and everything else, yeah, but I agree with you that a lot of kind of bad thought has been kind of emboldened by Trump. I think that's why people were really upset when he won the first time. I think people didn't realize that there was so much of that kind of thought in the United States, and it's why some people, me included, were incredibly upset the second time, where it's like, geez, like I'm sympathetic towards Trump 1 voters, but you're voting for Trump on the second go-around. Right. That's crazy.
Right.
It's unfortunate. I don't have anything good to say about that. I wish I did, but other than hopefully a lot of these guys are losing power come the midterms, and hopefully we can get a big reset with the Democrats and then some kind of accountability for what's happened, going forward after 2028. But yeah, geez.
So how do you think we can better enforce immigration?
This goes back to the very first thing I said again, that we need to have more honest conversations about things. Like, nobody should want illegal immigrants here. Like, we want to be able to track everybody, but like, realistically, you're not deporting, 12 or 13 million people. And as we saw, as soon as Trump started to get real big and tough on the immigration stuff, there's a whole bunch of industries that were like, well, hold on a second, there's a lot of employment. And all of a sudden he was like, well, the farmer illegal immigrants are okay, but we don't want these other illegal immigrants. And it's like, well, which ones? It's like, if you're talking about the crime committing ones, like, it has been validated over and over again. Like, natives are more likely to commit crime than illegal immigrants. There's just like, if you really want to do something about illegal immigration, in my opinion, there's no conversation that doesn't start with like some kind of path to amnesty for the people that are here. Like, if you're not willing to start at that point, I just don't know what your goal is other than to endlessly virtue signal on it. Like, I feel like there should be a path to amnesty, and you can penalize them 1 or 2% a year on their income for 10 years or something. If you want to figure out something like that, I don't know if it makes conservatives feel good to punish people. But like, they're here, they're contributing economically. For the most part, they're not criminals, because if they get caught committing crimes, they run huge risks of deportation. Most of them just come here to work. Like, figure out a way to integrate them legally into your system. And then from there, like, crack down on border enforcement or figure out a way to deport the people that are left that are the real bad guys. Nobody wants illegal immigrant rapists and murderers in this country. Like, I think everybody agrees on that. But I think there has to be some kind of path to amnesty, and anything else is just a big virtue signal, in my opinion.
Well, I agree, because, my dad, I'm a second-generation immigrant. He was an immigrant. He came here. He didn't have documentation, and he was able to become a naturalized citizen. And he started a business. He's contributed a lot to the country. So, I agree with giving mass amnesty to some people and making sure that we don't have violent criminals here in this country.
Uh-huh.
I just fear that this becomes more of like an excuse to expand the power of the executive branch, just so that, it becomes like this spread of, right-wing ideology that becomes about white and black rather than, making sure we keep violent people out of the country. We've heard people on the right, I forget the names, but they talk about like immigrants coming into this country and taking over the majority population, a majority white population. And I just think that that kind of rhetoric is very dangerous, especially when some of these people actually hold power in Trump's cabinet, and Trump himself, you know, supports these people. So, you know, I just don't know how we can blur the line, but or how we have already blurred the line between deporting people for good reasons versus deporting people for the sake of preserving the majority race or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, you have to you have to have people that are having honest conversations about the subject matter. Mm-hmm. Because some people do just, yeah, they feel like the racial demographic shift or something. But I mean, like, that argument doesn't even make sense, because, like, do you think Swedish people are coming to the United States to vote conservative, or Norwegians, or, like, it's not like, it's like, people don't come from Europe and are like, yeah, I'm a hardcore MAGA guy. Like, that just typically doesn't happen. Right. So, yeah, it's, I don't know. I think, and also, like, these people are going, yeah, I don't, that's a stupid argument. If people want to have that argument, then I think we should have that argument. Mm-hmm. But then it's like, are we going to balance out immigrants based on, like, their propensity to vote left or right? Like, is that what we're going to do? That seems kind of weird. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But it can't be, it should also come from Congress, too. Like, if this was a legislative debate, that would be healthier for us as well. Because then at least we have a framework passed by Congress that future presidents are beholden to, rather than, like, endless executive orders and actions that can be rescinded, you know, at a whim, or when the next president comes in.
So. Well, when the president can't make new laws, they can only enforce laws that already exist. So, you know,
like, well, ideally, like, we're supposed to do that. Yeah.
Because, I mean, like, he had the executive order of revoking birthright citizenship, but that got taken down because it violated the 14th Amendment.
Hopefully it will. I think, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
But then even, like, for stuff like DACA, which, I mean, like, I'm in favor of the concept of DACA, but, like, this was basically, I think Obama kind of using, I think it's TPS, a temporary protective status that the president has allotted to him, but, like, DACA, like, Trump has attacked it a few times, and theoretically, a future president could change their mind on that. It would just be nice if we had this debate in Congress, and, you know, I argued with conservatives about this, like, there's not going to be any legislation from Trump on immigration. It's not going to happen. You know, right. We have to, it's not going to happen. And so, like, do you feel like he's really accomplished his goal, and he had a Republican Congress, and, you know, nothing got done with it besides tax cuts being made permanent and whatever the one big beautiful bill was and the fucking $100 billion for ICE, which is an insane amount of money. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, it's, if you're not willing to, like, sit down and do a legislative argument on it, you're not having a real conversation about immigration, and I think those people should just be made fun of and bullied until they're no longer part of the conversation because it's a joke, you know?
Yeah, I mean, two more points. I don't want to take up too much of your time.
Sure.
So I know this election that came with Kamala and Trump, I noticed that a lot of the influence came from TikTok. A lot of young voters really were, you know, influenced by it. Young voters especially.
Yeah.
But especially when Charlie Kirk, you know, was spewing and, like, talking to people like you are. How much of that do you think influenced the election, TikTok?
It's hard to say because you've got your first order, second order, third order thing. So, like, you have the talk itself. And for TikTok, a lot of it is aimed at younger people who don't vote that much. So it's hard to know, like, well, how much did that affect it? But then you have these, like, second order things where, like, it's not just that conversation is happening on TikTok. It's also getting put onto other platforms where now they're having conversations about what's going on TikTok. Mm-hmm. And then you've also got these even extended effects where now instead of talking about something else, now you're talking about what was being talked about on TikTok. So even if the thing that was being talked about initially on TikTok wasn't creating new voters for conservatives or whatever, maybe you could have been talking about something else that would have energized more liberal voters, maybe, instead of dealing with the 50 million stupid thing conservatives said on TikTok. Instead of being on the defense all the time, you could have put forth a stronger positive argument for your candidate, maybe. I think we have to figure out social media platforms, because I think as they exist right now, they don't work very well.
I think the algorithm is very, like, it's people get, like, better at and just scroll on the algorithm.
Yeah.
And then I have friends I went to school with that I never would have thought they would be, like, Nick Fuentes fans.
Sure.
But, like, When I was running for city council, I'd speak to a lot of my friends I went to school with, and I'd try to gain their votes and stuff. And they'd say things like, you know, what do you think about Israel? That would be their question. But it's like, I'm a local representative. I have no power of what happens in Israel. But, like, that to me tells me. Oh.
Well,
oh,
sorry. I love you.
Way to go, Ethan.
Sorry.
Okay. Should I continue or?
I don't. Healthcare. Oh.
They were fighting over healthcare.
The peaceful socialist getting arrested for fighting is kind of crazy, I guess, but.
Okay.
Give him his fucking
You forgot the Mao Zedong
stupid
hat.
Fucking hat.
Okay.
Jesus Christ. Okay, sorry. What were you saying?
No, yeah. Wow. Okay.
Your friends, TikTok, media holes. Not
yeah. So
good.
I mean, like, yeah. I feel like it's left a lot of neo-Nazi, you know, anti-Semitic, you know, kind of rhetoric. That, you know, although I'm pro-Palestinian, I still don't think we should be, you know, pushing anti-Semitic rhetoric. I think it's dangerous. So, you know, to me, there, I agree there should be like some sort of, I guess, guardrails or regulations on social media platforms that push, you know, extremist rhetoric that can lead to, you know, I mean, I guess, I don't know, what do you think about that? Because, like, I don't want us to...
We're not even ready to have that conversation, like, as a country, because we have to... America is very obsessed with this concept of, like, free speech means mm-hmm. no regulations on anything. Mm-hmm. And until we're ready to, like, have a conversation about what does it mean to actually have freedom of speech, and mm-hmm. is freedom of speech really just, like, social media algorithms driving us into these, like, deeper and deeper holes? Like, is that... Like, we're just not capable of having that convo yet. Okay. But I do agree that that has to be addressed, but... The framework for that is going to have to come from a people with a more sophisticated understanding of like how media and culture works, mm-hmm. and not just these weird commitments to the ideas that just allow people to, you know, lie with impunity over and over again and radicalize people in the most absurd ways possible. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, last point, because I'm mm-hmm. from Syria.
Yeah.
And you know, I wanted to hear your thoughts on Al-Jilani and how you think he's doing.
I haven't followed any of the post Syrian Assad stuff. I mean, I wasn't a.
What do you think about Assad?
I mean, I don't like Assad. I was not
a fan
of Assad.
Either. Okay,
but like my biggest fear for the Middle Eastern region in general. But again, I haven't followed anything closely recently. Is that because Donald Trump is so stupid and the current administration doesn't have like a vision for foreign politics really at all, but especially for the Middle East, mm-hmm. I feel like Netanyahu is like in the driver's seat for a lot of stuff happening, mm-hmm. and I don't necessarily well. Especially for that government, I don't think that the Israeli government right now would have like the best interest of surrounding citizens in mind as much as like just what works best for Israel, even if it's to the detriment of other citizens. Mm-hmm. So like, I know they really want the Iranian regime gone. I know they're happy to see Assad go, but given the opportunity to support some kind of like puppet person that would be like a worse leader for their citizens, but more friendly towards Israeli security interests, you know, whatever that looks like. Yeah. I think Netanyahu would always choose that. And I don't think the United States would do anything to intervene because Trump is just whatever. So that would be my biggest fear, like on a very broad level. Now, I can't say with specificity for the current, you know, Syrian leadership or for what... Or like if Netanyahu or who Israel would support or how they're doing it. I just haven't read much into it recently, so yeah.
Okay. But. Well, I have family in Syria. They were persecuted under Assad, and my dad led a protest in the 60s against the Assad family.
Mm-hmm.
And I coming here to this country, I noticed like a lot of people who really seem uneducated about the topic, and they automatically assume that like because Assad got toppled, that there's going to be another, you know, terrorist organization taken over. Al-Jilani has like background in ISIS, I believe. I think he dispersed and created the Syrian Liberation Army, and they were able to overthrow Assad. But you know,
especially for Syria during the civil war. Like, if you look at any like that conflict, there's like 100 different groups on both sides, and it's very frustrating from an American perspective because when we talk politics, we're in a very like pristine, clean environment to where we can look at where all of our people come from. Mm-hmm. But to go to like the Middle East and say, well, this guy had a background in you know whatever terrorist group, and it's like any of these groups could be opposed to any number of people with any number of interests at any point in time. You know, like the Al-Qaeda faction that existed in Yemen, you know, didn't necessarily have the same leadership or interests as, you know, when Al-Qaeda existed a long time ago in Afghanistan. It's like a lot of it is really complicated, especially the Syrian war and especially the interests. And it's like every time there'd be like a new headline, like Russia flies down to Syria and it's like, is it to bomb Assad or is it to bomb the FSA? Is it to bomb, you know, ISIS? And it's like, and why are they bombing who? Mm-hmm. And it's like, if they're bombing ISIS, does that mean they're killing terrorists? Are they killing bad guys? Or is it just mm-hmm. because they're supporting Assad or they're killing good guys? And then at some point, Turkey goes and kills more Kurdish right. people and says whatever. And it's just like, that's just like the whole like, yeah, it's I hate it. Yeah, anytime somebody does that thing, like, well, they were part of XYZ group, so they're bad. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, we probably need a deeper analysis on that. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for the conversation. I appreciate it. How's it going?
Good. Yourself?
Pretty good.
Cool. I just want to keep this brief. I heard you're pretty pro-abortion, pro-choice.
Yes, I am. Yeah.
Could I ask what your argument behind that is?
I think that when we talk about like protecting like humans, I think that we're talking about protecting the subjective experience we have as humans. I think as a single cell, I don't think a single cell can have that experience. I don't think a bundle of cells can have that experience. I feel like the necessary parts of your brain to have that experience emerge. I think it's, I don't remember the number. What is it, like 14 to 16 weeks or something?
Something
in that range. And I think probably up until that range, I think abortion should be protected. Right.
Yeah. So if a child is born prematurely, right, uh-huh. and they're still dependent on a bunch of different machines, ventilator, feeding systems, et cetera, they're still considered a human being, correct?
Yeah.
And the date at which that child can be born prematurely and still survive is getting pushed back and back as medical technology gets better and better, correct?
Sure.
So if we get to a point where an embryo can be taken out, a single cell, and can survive on its own and develop without the need of a mother, would that single cell be considered a human being?
No.
Why?
All right, well, I mean, maybe you consider it a human thing, but it doesn't have the subjective experience we're trying to protect. Like, if I have a single cell creature and I crush it in a jar and I'm asking, like, you know, who's harmed, I don't think there's, like, a who to speak of there. Like, there's a cell that was destroyed, but there's no functioning there that's, like, there was a person to speak of that was harmed.
So is it based on, like, a memory thing? Because we don't start forming permanent memories till we're, like, I forget the age, but it's long past we're born.
No, I think it's a subjective experience where we can experience, like, pain and suffering, and we can be harmed, and we generally try to avoid harming people. But there's no, like, person, there's no conscious subjective experience to speak of until, you know, around 14, 16 weeks or whatever.
So your argument isn't based on personhood, it's based on, like, the subjective experience.
Yeah, I think it's the same thing we look at when we look to when people are dead, mm-hmm. right? Like, when the brain stops functioning, you can only deploy that conscious experience. We're like, oh, okay, what we can do, like, the body doesn't have that level of moral consideration anymore.
Definitely. Thanks.
Thank you. Hi, what's up?
What's going on?
Nothing much.
So I was going to talk to you about the prosecution of future MAGA, or the current MAGA politicians, assuming that there is a blue wave in the future.
Okay.
Is your goal retribution or the preservation of the rule of law?
I kind of both. I think that they kind of play into one another. I think that there has to be like a healthy fear of like being like lawless in the future, and that if there's no accountability or some kind of punishment or something for the current rule breakers, then I think that they would just do it again in the future. So, yeah.
Do you think our Constitution is currently in a state where it can properly prosecute these people, or?
I think we could find ways to do it if we got creative. I think you could find ways to do it. Yeah,
but. Like, with our current Constitution or to reform the Constitution to...
No, I think with our current laws and everything in place, I think we could find ways to do it.
What I know there's, like, the 14th Amendment and all that, but everything I can really think of, the pardon power that the president has, you know, the president can step down, the VP can pardon the previous president, that's precedent with Nixon. Everything that I can think of is just blocked by that vast power. If we are unable to properly prosecute these people because our Constitution is... set up in a certain way, are you okay with under the idea of the rule of law that these people are going to go away without being prosecuted or any sort of like retribution or anything like that?
Did you ever see the Pirates of the Caribbean movie?
Yes, I have.
Is it Keira Knightley? Is that the girl?
I have no idea.
When she's talking to Barbossa, that character, she asks something about like the pirates' rules or whatever, and he said they're more like guidelines.
They're more like guidelines.
If we've learned anything about rule of law and constitution, apparently they're guidelines. I'm sure I haven't sat down and, I had an idea before, but I don't remember what it was. But if we sat down and got really clever or creative, I'm sure we could figure something out. Maybe Trump pardons a bunch of people, and maybe we figure out a way to post-date like an impeachment, and we say, oh, actually, you're impeached from the first day you were in office, and then we go ahead and we, say that every action that was pardoned is no longer pardoned. We could figure something out to do it if we really wanted to. Maybe it would
but
be.
Isn't that the exact same strategy that Trump is trying to go against his political enemies and
what we are
trying to decry because that's like in violation of like the Constitution and all that?
I think we're against what they're doing is because they're violating the faith of the Constitution, right? Like, I don't think holding them accountable for doing that.
Do you think that you'd be violating the faith of the Constitution by doing that? I mean, like,
by trying to preserve future rule of law? I don't think so. I think that overall, I think it would be good for future preservation of rule of law to find a way, even if you have to get legally creative, to hold these people accountable 100%.
How do you define the rule of law exactly? Like,
Well, it depends. I mean, what do we want to look at? I don't think that it was ever intended by the framers for the president of the United States to be able to do economic policy on his own. I don't think that the NEA, the National Emergency Act, I don't think shouldn't have ever given Trump the ability to like do unilateral tariffs with no oversight from Congress indefinitely over and over and over again for personal reasons, for bullshit emergencies that he's declared. Yeah. Now, these are things that he's declared, and then the Republican Congress has kind of abdicated the responsibility for oversight. But like these are things that I think are... fundamentally against the spirit of the rule of law in the United States.
I can agree with you that it's against the spirit, and it's definitely not what the framers intended, and the fact that our Congress is unable to do anything about it is like a travesty. But I would make an argument saying one of the reasons why it's such a travesty we can't do anything about it is just because our constitution really set up to punish the president for doing these sort of things. Like, what do you indict the president on for trying to set unilateral economic policy? Or what do you indict the president on when
he's doing a military operation
in Venezuela without an authorization of military force?
Indict him for murder, indict him for bribery, indict him for... I mean, there's a number of things.
Then that just all goes down to the pardon again. Like, I feel like if we want to prevent this in the future, we need to reform the Constitution, but I don't know if our current system is...
They didn't need to reform the Constitution to do what they're doing now, right? You agree with that, right?
Yes, but if we're playing by the rules and they don't... If we want to keep the rules around, the Constitution around, then... We got to play by the rules, right?
So. Yeah, but we need to make them realize that if you break the rules, there are going to be some kind of consequences, even if we have to get creative to figure them out. But I don't think continuing to patch the rule book over and over again, with the understanding that they'll just find ways to break it in the future, I don't know. There just doesn't seem to be a tenable position, because I don't think they'll care much about it. Like, whatever rules we put in place, they'll break them in the future.
Well, the argument would be that you would patch the rule book so that you can punish them in the future within the rule book.
But then they'll just break those rules again, right?
You've made the analogy before of Monopoly, right? So you say two people play Monopoly. If someone stabs someone, then it doesn't matter what rules you make in Monopoly, they're still going to stab you. But what happens if you play Monopoly, but next time you bring a gun with you, you know, and if they try to stab you, you shoot them. But you make it as part of the Monopoly rules that you're able to keep a gun with you. Like, there's
doesn't
rules
matter if you
that
make
you can
that,
create
you don't need
in
to...
order to legally sure. be able to punish these people. You don't need to, like, bend the rules now. And then,
I guess you
like,
could, but, like, then what if you can't make those rules?
Then that's just how it is. I mean, that's how
but
our
then,
Constitution
but then
is.
Our
if
country
you're unable
is lost.
To, like, well, that...
Like, do you agree that if this administration isn't held accountable, America's... I don't know if we survive the next go-around of this.
Well, that's why we have to push like hell in order to legally get these things instituted.
I don't want to waste the time or political capital to try to codify a whole new set of rules. Like, I'd rather, like, we do things about, like, affordability and healthcare and immigration, like, the stuff that matters, and appoint a special prosecutor and figure out ways to... Maybe it's just, investigating all their bank accounts a million times or figure out who they took money from and charge them with bribery or whatever else. Like, I think that's more effective than trying to do a whole bunch of patchwork on the Constitution than to go back and then after doing that patchwork to try to hold them legally accountable and then hoping that you win those... Like, it's just...
Well,
so much.
I don't think you can patchwork the Constitution then retroactively punish people. I think you... Sure. People would know that you can't just like institute a law and then go backwards and punish people. So
fuck them with the current laws you have as creatively as you can. They're creative. They've been very creative with their interpretation of everything now. And then move forward in the future and hope they won't do it again, knowing that the other people on the other side
will... reform the thing so that it'll be easier. You don't have to be creative with the laws in the future. You can just do it in a more...
Yeah, but like
normal
what behavior would you even criminalize now officially in some kind of law?
You could probably lower the vote required to impeach a president, probably. That would probably hold people more accountable.
Maybe. That would require an amendment.
Well, anything that would involve holding the president more accountable in the future is going to require an amendment, right? I mean, it's not like we're going to be able to pass a law saying, oh, we can now impeach the president without that being an amendment.
Well, I mean, they endlessly investigated Hunter Biden to get back at Joe Biden. Like, they did this for years and years and years.
Them investigating Joe Biden wasn't a part of a constitutional, like, change.
No, but
I'm
saying they found a way to attack Biden endlessly through his son without having to need a new law or new clever...
Yeah, but we can agree that that's a bad thing. If we don't change the system in the future, then that's just going to keep happening because that door...
Yeah, but
opened.
I don't think they did that because the system allows them to. They did that because the system allows them to, and they know there'd be no pushback for it. Like, they had the opportunity to get rid of the filibuster, and they said no when Trump was begging them to do this a few months ago, because they know that once the Senate or the House flips, that they're completely fucked, and they don't want to see an endless deluge of Democratic legislation coming through that they're not going to be able to filibuster anymore.
Well,
so,
I
like,
don't necessarily disagree with that, because I'm a never Trump Republican. So.
Sure, yeah. So, I mean, they do stop when they see there's going to be accountability. I'm sympathetic to your position. I don't, like, as much as I meme about it, I don't really want to see, like, a total abdication of, like, rule of law. But something that I think shackles your mind and shackled my mind and shackles a lot of people's minds is this idea that, like, the other side is still playing in somewhat good faith, and they're really not. Like, the Trump administration, for a million reasons, has done so many absurdly anti-legal, against the law, just things that are absurd beyond notion. And the idea that we're trying to figure out how to navigate in some type of, like, rules-based way to hold people accountable so that it doesn't – it's just, like, we're so far over that I would be okay with a very a very aggressive special prosecutor, like, you know, take Jack Smith, you know, shoot him up with fucking meth or something, and then just have this guy go crazy on indictments, you know, give him an AI and just go wild on these people. That's investigating everybody for every trade they ever made or bribery attempt they ever made or whatever, just so that they know in the future, they're like, I want to do some crazy fuck shit, but I know if I do this, Democrats are going to get me for it. That needs to be in their head, because Democrats have that for every fucking thing we do. I don't want to pack the court. Republicans will do it. Bro, if Republicans thought packing the court would help them, they would do it immediately. They're not waiting for you. Wow. McConnell didn't wait for a Supreme Court judge to get blocked before he blocked one. Like, Republicans don't wait for anything. They do it when they think they need to. So Democrats need to unshackle their mind, and they need to look past the current possibilities to a new horizon. And then Republicans, like, I think they would have to do that one time, and I think Republicans go, okay, no more fuck shit from our side. We're not going to do that anymore because we know we're going to get punished on it. Like, they lost this gerrymandering war really badly. And, you know, Indiana turned around on their gerrymander attempts. And I think that Republicans are heavily going to reconsider those types of things in the future because they got screwed so hard on that deal. And there just needs to be some of that. Whatever legally creative way you could do it, I think it's good. But I just don't want to waste time. Like, the punishment needs to be there for conservatives when we get into office so that they don't do it again. But I don't want to waste 4 more years on it. And then it's like, fuck, like, what do we spend?
Well, I don't know. I just feel very uncomfortable with holding our politicians accountable. It's just going to be whoever can come up with the most creative attempt at, you know, punishing them, you know, instead of operating within,
too,
like, a constitutional
But that's
system.
What Trump did this term.
Well, yes,
we
but
got this guy,
we try to fix that for the
hates,
future.
Apparently,
I mean,
every person he hates, like, has committed mortgage fraud.
We can agree on the
symptom.
Yeah,
but there's no way to fix that. How do you fix, should the president not be, like, I don't think he should ever do this, but should the president be allowed to publicly tweet out who he wants indicted? I don't think he should, but could you make a law against that? Like, probably not. But, like, they should know that, like, if you do this shit, you're going to get fucked for it.
If you think that we can, like, you know, get our best minds together in order to come up with the most creative prosecution, then surely we can get our best minds together and be able to come up with some sort of amendment or some sort of, like, new government process that'll hold the President of the United States more accountable.
I think
I don't know, just feeling, having it codified within the law just feels more right to me.
I know it does, but I don't, there's, have you ever seen The West Wing?
The West Wing, as in, like, the show?
Yeah.
No, I haven't.
Wasn't what? The West Wing of the White House?
I thought they tore that down.
No, yeah, I haven't seen The West Wing, but I feel like I saw, like, a scene or whatever where, I don't know if this is The West Wing or some other show, but is it, like, some guy is talking to some other dude, and they brought in a bunch of these smarty Soviet dudes, I think this is, Scalia, I think, was giving his talk or something, where they brought in a bunch of foreign people, and they were going over, like, the U.S. Constitution, and they were like, oh, there's, like, 100 different holes where there are different ways that you could abuse the system or mess with U.S. law or whatever else, and that's just going to be true of every system of law, of every constitution, of every, you know, huge section of legal stuff and federal rules. The reality is that, like, you need strong institutions, and you need people that have a commitment to the rule of law to make sure that it works. There's never going to be a document that can cover for everything, because there are so many different balancing tests that are codified in law, right? There are so many different, like, subjective things. So, like, for instance, when we invoke the Alien Enemies Act, it requires some type of, like, foreign invasion or us to be at war with the country. And Donald Trump's like, well, technically, Venezuela is invading us because Tren de Aragua is part of the Venezuelan government, yeah, and Tren de Aragua has operators in our country.
You know,
so we think the
fentanyl is a weapon of mass destruction.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So it's like, so what law do you make? Like, well, now do we have to define what every WMD can be, or do we have to, and it's like, you can't really, there's no way you could stay ahead of that. You have to have people that are operating with some level of good faith in the system, and we need to find a way to bring that back. And I think accountability is a way to do it, unfortunately. But I don't think that making endless rules, like, if anything, I feel like it almost further emboldens bad behavior. There's so many Republicans that I hear will talk about, like, January 6th, and they're like, well, if January 6th was illegal, why did they add those, you know, few lines to the ECA? And it's like, motherfucker, it was illegal before they added those lines. But now that they added the lines, like, well, they were perfectly in the right before. And it's like, it wouldn't stop Trump in the future if he wanted to find another way to rig the election. So, yeah, I'm so sympathetic. I know it doesn't sound like it, but I'm very sympathetic to your arguments. I just don't know if it's, like, a pathway that has any that bears fruit at the end of it, I guess. Yeah.
Okay. I got one more thing I want to ask.
Yeah, go for it.
What is it with the liberal content creators? It feels like no one's doing what you're doing, where they go out in the real world and they do, like, canvassing and,
yeah, because
all that.
Nobody,
like,
I think, well,
like,
for the
super, is it because they're too focused on, like, the media aspect of it and, like, building their audience, or, like, what?
Republicans are very good at vertically integrating everything they do. So, like, the fact that, like, I think even Joe Rogan said, or was it Joe Rogan or somebody else, was like, I just talked to Trump a few days ago or whatever. I think I was listening to him talk to somebody, mentioned this, and I'm like, why is Trump talking to Joe Rogan? Like, the president, and then the cabinet, and then the whole executive is working with all like the podcasters and the right-wing media influencers who are all like disseminating their message across social media to all of your social media guys. Then the Republican people like carry this message forward. Like if I go talk to a frontline Trump voter, he's going to be able to tell me the same things that everybody else in their media apparatus is saying. And then meanwhile, if I look at the left-wing media, like there's like three different factions of like people on the left. And you've got the far left people, so the socialists and the tankies, who are unfortunately a very commanding presence online, who hate the Democratic Party and will never fucking vote for Democrats ever, despite how they lie to you about it. Then you have like your center-left liberal people who are just largely silent, okay, because they're watching in horror with the tanky people. And then they're also watching the third faction is like the kind of like the left-wing media. And for left-wing media, ignoring all the tanky people, you have all these people that are so traumatized with being called like Trump derangement syndrome havers that they're constantly trying to criticize their own side to show how fair and balanced they are. And they're like, well, I think that it's good that Biden was super senile and he left, and that's good. And we need to talk more about like what the Democrats are doing wrong and all this stuff. And then meanwhile, you go to like Fox News and they're like, yeah, Hugo Chavez like was commanding Dominion voting machines from the grave to change the election for us. And the Italians were also flipping votes using bit switching from electron beam shooting satellites. And Giuliani and Donald Trump believe. Yeah, and it's like, Jesus Christ, like, it's just not the same. So I think that it's just hard for on the left to get out and do anything, because you know that as soon as you go out, not only are you fighting against a whole conservative apparatus that has no relationship with truth whatsoever, you're also going to be fucking getting attacked from everybody on the left for it. The center left is going to attack you for being too moderate or not moderate enough, and then the far left are going to attack you for being liberal, and it's just like, fuck. So yeah, I think that's probably why people are a little bit scared to dip their toes in and do anything.
Would you send a message out to them to be more politically active?
I think it's coming together more, and it's starting to happen. Newsom has taken some leadership on it. I hope that there's more like support for politicians and movement on the ground. But obviously, I always welcome people to join me or to start their own thing, even, or whatever. I think is always like a really positive thing. Yeah.
Okay. I don't think I have anything else specifically.
Cool.
Anything you want to ask me?
No, I feel bad for you if you're never Trump Republican. That's a rough.
Oh no, it's very, very lonely.
It's a lonely,
right now.
Rough world.
I'm trying to establish my own real Republican organization.
Yeah, I think you guys should be excited for 2020, like 6 and 7. I think that once the MAGA stuff falls apart, there's going to be a big vacuum that people are trying to fill in the Republican Party. It's not going to be Vance. He can't. These people have no charisma.
No, that's not what I mean. So this is something that I've been mulling over my head for a very long time of how can we get the Republican Party back to a principled conservative position instead of, you know, this populist bullshit. It's either we're gonna have to get a conservative, like, why were they willing to abandon their principles in order to like support Trump? Well, it's because Trump was able to win elections, basically. Trump was able to prove that he could win, so that means his ideas must be right, meaning that we should abandon everything that we used to believe in. Okay, so I feel like that, like, Trumpism, like the MAGA ideology, will be attempted at least one more election after Trump. And I'm kind of concerned if it is attempted again, and if that politician somehow wins, God forbid, that's going to just reinforce it in the Republican Party. But if there ever is a sort of normal conservative, you know, never Trumper, Don Bacon, hopefully, please run. If someone like that is able to win the Republican primary, but they lose against a Democrat, then that's just going to, it's like negative reinforcement. It's just going to revert people back towards populism. And that's what I'm really sort of concerned of. So I feel like if there is going to be like a blue wave, I kind of want like the most populist, like fascist person in the Republican Party to run. That way they can get absolutely fucking destroyed and they get purged and proven that they can't win elections like at all.
Yeah, so, I guess we'll see. I don't know. I feel like the Trump cult stuff is kind of hard because I'm pretty sure that like him losing didn't seem to slow his momentum in 2020. So maybe once he gets old and dies, I don't think it'll be Vance. We'll see what happens. But hey, I encourage never Trumpers to fight for a better conservative movement. So, yeah. All
right. Say hi to Connor for me.
Yeah. Have a good one. Hey, how's it going?
Hey, Steven, how's it going?
Pretty good.
Wish Owen Schroyer was here so I could get a follow up on my why no new wars question. But
wait, you wish who was here?
Owen Schroyer.
Yeah,
I had the follow-up for the what do you mean no new wars, but
yeah, Jesus, yeah.
I wanted to talk about the current in civil discourse. It seems that everyone's vibe-based now instead of like fact-based opinion, evidence-based opinion. It's all like vibe-based, like like increasingly so since 2016 in Trump's first arc when like Ben Shapiro hit the mainstream and he was like, my facts don't care about your feelings, but now it's like my your facts won't get in the way of my feelings. It's kind of like, are you familiar with Plato's Allegory of the Cave?
Yes.
Where it's like there's these objects brought in front of the fire and they cast a shadow on the wall and then the guy gets free, sees the world for how it is, tries to come back and teach them that this is an illusion, and then they beat him to death with rocks.
Yeah.
That kind of feels like it is now with the cognitive dissonance between perception and reality. And what do you think that we should do to try to correct that course?
I mean, populism always takes this kind of predictable course of populist leaders become popular because there's some resentment in the population, but then once they get elected, they can never really deliver on any of their promises, and then people kind of swing back to like, okay, I guess we have to try boring politics again. So I think the most important thing is when the Democrats come back into power, they have to find ways to deliver that are immediately visible to Americans, because like there are too many things that are hidden from so many people. Like the ACA had a tremendous success in getting health care coverage out to a lot of uninsured people. A lot of people don't know that. I think it was like 15 million more people or something, 10 or 15 million more people, Americans, were insured after the ACA expansion. But nobody saw that. They just saw their health care premiums go up. And health care premiums did go up, but they didn't go up as fast as they would have otherwise. But that's a hard thing for people to say, right? Like if something costs me $300 one year and then the next year it's $350, all I see is the price going up. And if you tell me, well, it would have been $400, like I guess maybe, but it's still $350, like I feel like I'm not perceiving that difference. So Democrats have to find a way to do some project or something where they're kind of like building something that is immediately visible. As much as I hate Trump and I hate everything he does and everything he stands for, and I just fucking hate everything, like that the Trump savings account, I actually think that's like a good kind of idea, because I can put money in an account for my kid and I can see the number and I can hopefully watch the number go up. And that's like a thing that you just see and it's visible and it's there. It might be something as stupid as building a fucking statue, or it may be building functioning like train lines somewhere, but like I think that Americans like things that they can see when they see a thing and they're like, oh, that's a new thing that we have, or that's like a thing I can put my fingers on or at least click with my mouse. I think people like things like that. So whatever Democrats are doing going forward policy-wise, it has to be something that's a little bit more visible so that when there are policy wins, Americans can see it better. And I think that kind of helps to counter some of the populist rhetoric. But I think we'll see a receding of a lot of the populist rhetoric just because Trump has failed so spectacularly to deliver on anything that he promised. I don't know if people are going to buy into it 100%. Going forward, at least for one election cycle or two, yeah.
You don't think that's like kind of something they've tried already, where like Joe Biden did like Juneteenth, or any kind of the public statements they've done, where like a new holiday or new celebration, or electing a Supreme Court justice that's like a woman and a black
Most
woman.
Americans don't care about the Supreme Court, and I don't fuck Juneteenth. No offense. Like, I mean, like, these are not like the things that I think that hype up a lot of Americans when like, yeah, like a federal holiday or whatever. Like, I think. It has to be more visible than that and more broad, I think, for people to really get behind it or to feel like it's like something is happening. It's just, we have to find a way to make those processes more visible because people just don't see it all the time. Like if I talk about like the Inflation Reduction Act or whatever, like huge investments in green energy, like I don't know what that looks like or what that means. I don't have like – maybe I don't even live in an area that has a lot of access to solar power. Or I don't see how it affects me at all. One thing that I thought was really cute, I think it was Stothert. Marin Omaha, I think – a long time ago, implemented like a new tax downtown. I think they were trying to capture revenue from the College World Series or something. And what happened was is they had like a new tax that they put on restaurants downtown. And restaurant owners were obviously very annoyed by this because it meant their prices were higher. And they had like a separate line item on the receipts that said like the mayor's tax. And then they put that on there. And this is a negative thing, but like it impacted the way that voters felt about it a lot. And I know some people tried to do this, and I think Trump went and dick sucked them so they'd stop. I think Amazon was starting to add like Trump tariffs, I think, on a thing, but they got that shut down in like a day or something. But, you know, just being able to point to stuff like that, you know, maybe you save some money in your energy bill and they find a way to like make that immediately visible, I think is a good thing to figure out how to do. Yeah,
I think it's, we have it in my town, South Carolina, like a hospitality tax. It's okay. Just like a 1% tax that the town uses is 1% on like all like restaurants eating out, like all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
And it goes into like a fund that can be used for like specific things like schools and like infrastructure and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do agree. I think I was a big fan of the IRA bill and infrastructure bill that Biden passed. But a lot of them are like 10-year initiatives that are very hard to track.
Yeah, and some of these things are like Trump is literally putting on the sign like paid for or like by the Trump administration, like, and then it's like paid for by the infrastructure bill or whatever. And it's like, that's not your bill. So they try to find ways to take credit for it. Because
I don't think a single Republican voted for it, but they are taking credit for it when it comes to their district.
A lot of the time, or very few Republicans vote for it. Yeah, it's very frustrating. Yeah.
But like the underlying effect, like I feel like there's a lot of patchwork things. But do you think like the biggest thing to help would be like bring back like civics and media literacy into schools? Like I think that we're at a point in time where we should probably just have a like a media mass media course that teaches media literacy.
I agree with that, but the fight over what that course will look like, and also the federal government doesn't dictate curriculum, despite people thinking it does, that would be very hard to get every student aware with. But I would be in favor of some type of, like, you have, like, math, history, whatever. You also have, like, a media literacy class. I think that should be required, because it's navigating the information environment. It's so abstracted now from, like, the actual core issues. You know, like, you're seeing, like, a take on TikTok or whatever else. Like, people don't have the tools right now, I think, to evaluate all this stuff. And having those would probably substantially improve every area of our lives, because it would improve how voters engage with the democratic system. So I would be in favor of that. I just don't know how you would enforce it or get everybody on board with it. Maybe state by state, but I think it would be important, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. It would be difficult to get all states on board. I don't know how that would look like to encourage them. Probably some kind of like financial incentive, like create a new title that creates funding for schools that if you opt in, you could get access to that money, possibly.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah.
All right. And last thing, Protoss over Zerg.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, have a good one, man.
Hey, Destiny.
Hi, what's up?
My name's Caden. I have a question from my friend Khan. He's a big fan of yours. He just wasn't able to be here today.
Okay.
His question is, how can we have a conversation with conservatives when there is a wholesale denial of reality and top-down prevention of accountability from their side? Is there even a point trying to talk with them anymore?
I mean, I think there's always a point trying to talk. I think there's a reason why they avoid the conversations. So I think trying to talk is always good. You just have to keep forcing the conversation. You have to keep like demonstrating that they don't have answers. But sometimes when I'm thinking like what would be effective, I kind of look at like what the other side is doing. And if I see that there is a thing that they lean into a lot, and if I see a thing that's avoiding a lot, it communicates to me what they think is effective and what they think isn't effective. So conservatives, like politicians and media figures, are deathly afraid of critical conversations. So that communicates to me that they know that they'll look bad in these conversations, so they'll avoid them, which means I think we should be pushing harder to have them, especially when this is the side of like facts over feelings and, you know, they want to have challenging conversations, everything else. I think it's good to have people verbally pushing them on that over and over and over again, so that even if you don't have the conversations, you can at least make people aware that they're too afraid to have them.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. How much longer are we on for? Person behind me on the laptop, whoever you are. Okay, or just ignore me. That's fine. Okay, hi.
Hi,
again, hi again. What's up?
Sorry, I have a lot to ask and talk about. This is probably going to be my last time, though.
Sure.
I know that you said that you would be in favor of Supreme Court reform as well as abolishing the filibuster. And I believe you've said before that we should expand the House, the number of House seats. If I'm getting that wrong, please correct me. So I do agree that the House being capped at 435 is just so stupid now. It most likely should be expanded. But my fear is that usually the House of Representatives is kind of where we find the craziest of the crazy, like your Marjorie Taylor Greens. She's the only one I can really think of right now. But how do you think that we could combat that while also expanding it? Just because especially when you get more, like granular in politics, it tends to be way more out there. So like these House districts tend to be way more.
I mean, I think I mean, if that's what Americans feel, they should be represented in Congress, as crazy as it is. It's kind of like not being happy with, your blood pressure and saying, well, we should just stop measuring it. Like, I mean, that's not the solution. The solution is to fix that issue. Mm-hmm. The House should be increased in size so that we have better representation and more proportionality. Because right now, even the House, I think per population, still slightly favors conservatives.
Yes.
Obviously not as much as the Senate. But so, yeah, I think it should be expanded for that reason. There are people that there are Marjorie Taylor Greene politicians. There are Marjorie Taylor Greene U.S. citizens. Like, and if they believe whatever they believe, like they deserve the representation in Congress like anybody else. And if we're trying to fight against those beliefs, then the fight for that should be had on the media landscape or the cultural landscape, not necessarily trying to find a way to disenfranchise them on the political institutional landscape.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What are your thoughts on expanding or making the Senate based on population? Do you think that that's a worthwhile move?
People hate me, but I mean, I understand the idea behind our bicameral legislature, and I like the idea of, like, I think states have their own incentives sometimes, and the states can have their own interests, and I think it's fair to have the states represented in the Senate. I'm okay with that. I know a lot of people aren't, but I think I'm okay with that.
Like population-based or...
Just the state. The state itself has two votes in the Senate for per state, and that they have that thing. I think that's okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. But, I mean... I tend to, I guess...
I think one quick thing, I think the getting rid of the filibuster, I think, maybe alleviates some of the complaints that people that don't like the way the Senate works, I think, maybe helps with. And maybe that's a strong argument for... One of the strong arguments for abolishing the filibuster, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of go back and forth, unfortunately. It really sucks. I just... at least on abolishing the filibuster.
I think the best solution, actually, is I don't think the filibuster should be abolished at all. I think the filibuster needs to have somebody speaking all the time. I think it works because then nobody... It would be harder to filibuster because you need somebody up there speaking. We would get younger people because you can't have a 92-year-old dude who's not going to be able to speak that long. He's going to fall over and die. You might have more athletic people because maybe the guy filibustering, you know, passes out. You got to get people to run to Congress and go and vote real fast. So you get, like, I just think it's a good... I think it would be a better system. So maybe for the filibuster, you need to actually stand up there and talk the whole time, and then that would be a better way to enforce it. But not. Otherwise, I think, yeah, getting rid of the filibuster in some form maybe makes that Senate a little bit less harsh, considering how much it favors, you know, a certain political party, yeah.
We also need Puerto Rico to become a state, like yesterday.
Yeah, Puerto Rico, D.C., like, these places not being states, I think, is very strange. I don't know how that fits in, but that's very weird. Yeah, I agree. I think they should be, but obviously conservatives never go for it. But,
oh,
I mean, they should be, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. What's up? How's it going?
How's it going, Destiny? I'm a pretty big fan, not going to lie, so this might be boring. But I was wondering, like, so after Trump, like, 2028... And all this. What are your predictions of what the Republican Party looks like after Trump?
I don't even know what 2028 is going to look like.
Yeah,
my guess is going to be that there's going to be a lot of people who are going to pretend they never supported him, or that it was like too ridiculous or too far, and they're going to kind of, you know, scatter. It's like the Iraq War stuff. Like, all the Republicans disavow it now and don't support it and say they never did. And I feel like for the Trump stuff, a lot of that is going to be the same.
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you on that. Like, my stepdad seems to think that the end-all, be-all is term limits. Once we get all these career politicians out of government and we bring together, like we pull in more people from the younger generation, that's going to fix everything. And I don't think that's the solution either. Like,
not necessarily. I mean, like, there's something to be said for the incumbent advantage in the House, maybe, and even in the Senate. Maybe it's too much. Maybe something needs to be done in terms of term limits there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't have the strongest feeling for it. I think we have a lot more pressing issues related to the media environment and everything now. Like, if you were to term out a lot of these guys, are the new people elected going to necessarily be that much better? I don't know if I'm fully convinced of that.
Because, I mean, they elected the people who are in now anyway, and they're pretty fine with how that goes, too.
Yeah. Like, there was a primary for the Trump stuff, and I mean, you know, DeSantis had no chance. He got obliterated, and I always forget the other lady's name. The lady who ran, it was Trump, it was DeSantis, and it was like a more traditional conservative lady.
I know you're talking.
Anyway.
Carrie Lake?
No. But whoever it was, she got eliminated, so, and annihilated. Like, Trump didn't even do a debate with these people. They were so unpopular, so. There are a lot of changes to government we could make. I don't know how I feel about term limits. I don't know if that would change much. Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
And then as far as – I think I was listening to you the live stream while I was at work, and impromptu Lee came over here. So I was like – I think I heard them say that Gavin Newsom had been, like, unofficially crowned as, like, the possible candidate that we're going to run in 2028. And I was wondering, do you think he can win, like, on a national scale? Because
I have no clue. It's 2028 is so far away.
Yeah.
With the way that this federal government is acting and ICE and everything, we don't even know if we're going to have midterm elections for real. So I have no idea.
Especially with the changes that Trump is trying to make to the voting stuff.
Yeah, like, will Gavin run? I don't know. Would he win a primary? I don't know. Like, here's the thing. Like, Gavin is taking strong positions, and he's representing, like, liberals, like the center-left, on a national level. And I appreciate that. Nobody's been doing that. So for all the people who are upset at him, well, I mean, put forth your own person. Like, have somebody else come out and make strong statements on the national level. I appreciated AOC's general presence before, even if she's to the left of me. I don't know why we don't see as much of her. Maybe she's more doing the inner workings of Congress stuff now. But I appreciate Mamdani, although now he's elected, so maybe he doesn't have – well, I mean, Newsom is elected. There are people that I want to see more of on the national stage. We just need more of these center-left people coming out and like making strong statements and being strong political leaders. And I don't know how that has to happen, but that if people don't like Newsom, then put someone else up that can stand up to the Trump regime and, you know, have a strong message that people are resonating with.
If you could have it your way, who would you want to see, like, on that national level for the Democratic Party and stuff?
I don't even think about it. I wait until it's way close to the election. I don't like to fantasize and...
Because there may be even candidates.
Who knows, Are you even going to know? You know, there might be, you know, a year before, like, people are starting to come up that we've never even considered before. So, yeah.
Gotcha. Well, I appreciate it. Big fan. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.